You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 420 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carasino.
And we're coming to you in different locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the first place Seattle Mariners.
Wow, there it is. And I'm coming to you right in Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. It is the 420 edition of the Pelton Cast. And we're no longer doing a search for Seattle's best IPA, but I feel like this is the most opportune time to announce our search for Seattle's best dispensary. No?
I think that might be another abandoned search. I suspect it is very timely, though, because HempFest came up on the Discord
there
today.
We go.
What were the odds of that happening on the same day as episode 420? All right, let's get into it. I don't know that we have a lot to get to, but let's get into it anyway. Starting with our toast this week. First up, a congratulations to Jewel Loyd, named to the USA Olympic women's basketball roster for the second consecutive Olympics. Was alongside Storm teammates Sue Bird and Brianna Stewart, helping the USA win gold in Tokyo in 2021. Now it's just Jewel Loyd, because Neko Gumake is probably the greatest eligible player who has never played for the US Olympic team for very complex political reasons. And then Skylar Diggins-Smith has been on in the past, but is not part of this particular go-round.
You're just alluding to very complex political reasons on the Pelton Cast?
No.
And then not getting into those complex political reasons? You thought I would just sit and let that one go by?
This is not my necessarily area of expertise, but she did not make it in 2012 when, like Caitlin Clark, who did not make it this time, she was the rookie hot number one pick. 2016 was the year she unquestionably should have made it. Both her and her LA Sparks teammate Candace Parker, for various political reasons, were left off the team.
What are these political reasons, though? That's what I don't understand.
A lot of UConn players made the team, and Gino Auriemma coached it. I mean, that's basically it at the end of the day.
I feel there's like also, describing there's also that as like, political is not exactly right.
There's also like shoe company politics involved. I mean, I think that's the term, isn't it?
About it's like nepotism is basically it's UConn nepotism that's happened. Where did Neko Gumake go?
Stanford.
And who's the coach now of the team?
Of the women's national team?
Yeah.
Cheryl Reeve of the Lynx is now coaching the team.
Okay.
And then Neko tried to play for Nigeria in 2021, but the FIBA denied her request to switch her nationality.
Why?
You're generally not allowed to do it after you're cap tied to a team. There have been a few occasions where they have allowed it. They probably should have in this case.
The goal should be to have the good players playing in the games.
But you don't want like the transfer portal of nations necessarily.
Why not? You'd rather have worse players playing? Give me a reason. Break that down for me. Literally, this is for entertainment is the purpose here. Let me just back this up for a second.
But also the purpose is to represent your country.
If
it's something
no.
country you don't really have any ties to, then that's not the case. And if you're just
part
going because you were no
fun.
Longer good enough to make the U.S. team.
Yes. But part of the NECA entertainment like, factor of the Olympics is players who are from a small country who wouldn't normally have this opportunity. That is part of the entertainment factor. But realistically speaking, if you cap it a certain amount or something, that might be kind of fun.
Which generally you are only allowed one naturalized player on your roster. I don't know how that would have affected NECA specifically. I don't know off the top of my head her citizenship for Nigeria. But in this particular case, given like how wrongfully she's been denied a spot on the U.S. Olympic team, they should have allowed her to change. And it was an opportunity to grow the game in Africa, which would have been good for everybody involved. So Neko Gumake has never played in the Olympics.
What is our
it's
stance
ridiculous.
On Gino Auriemma? Are we pro generally?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
this is just one
did coach two of the great players in Storm history, including Sue Bird. Very tight with him. So, and he doesn't unilaterally pick the U.S. Olympic team, or didn't when he was the coach.
Who
but
was on that team in 2016? Neko Gumake was in her prime. in 2016.
One MVP of the fucking WNBA in 2016.
And did I love that this is a thing that I'm indignant about. Can you imagine 8 years ago being indignant about Neko Gwumike not being on
the 2016 Olympic team?
2016 Olympic
team. She won the MVP. That was the year LA won the title, led by Neko and Candace Parker, who didn't win.
Not good enough
Olympic
for you,
team.
Gino. Here's the real issue, though, is that what did the U.S. team in that Olympics do? They won comfortably.
I mean, they won gold. They've won every year, every Olympics going back to 1996.
It's just kind of not that much fun at this point, right? Because then you can have a team where you don't have to choose the best players. You can leave somebody like Neko Gwumike off. But if all of a sudden you're like, you don't choose her and Nigeria has the opportunity to bring in Neko Gwumike, that might be a more serious conversation now. Imagine if Caitlin Clark could go and play for another country in this Olympics.
I mean, I don't think that in the turnaround to get her naturalized to another country, hypothetically, she could. She's not senior national team cap tied. Neko was because she had played by 2021, because I think she has played in the world championships for the USA, just not in Olympics. And it's not like the 2000, I look at the 2016 Olympic roster. It's not like there's any bad players on that. They took Stewie is a rookie that year. Tamika Catchings, Elena Deladon are the other power forwards on the team.
There's a standard that applied to UConn players that doesn't apply to players from Stanford or Iowa.
So the U.S., the Olympic...
I don't even know why.
The USA Basketball Committee's position on Caitlin Clark...
You had no idea we'd be fighting about this right now.
I did not. USA Basketball's position on Caitlin Clark specifically is that the distinction between her and Stewie and some of these other players who have made it as rookies is that they had previously attended national team camps. Caitlin Clark has been unable to because the camp they held was during the Final Four. She was a little busy.
She was too good to go to the camp.
That is correct.
I swear to God.
If she had been less good, she would potentially be on the Olympic team. I mean...
It was an intentional decision not to choose Caitlin Clark, though.
It was. I mean, look, Caitlin Clark...
That is
not...
probably way more of a... When you talk about political reasons, I think Caitlin Clark not being on it is way more political reasons than Neko Gwumike not being on it.
It certainly was an intention that had more eyes on it and more stakes in terms of both... If they didn't pick her, or if they did pick her and she didn't play a lot of minutes. It's not like the Stanford fans would have been outraged if Neko Gwumike was sitting on the bench behind whoever it was in 2012. Probably you're still Tamika Catchings.
You're saying that people would be outraged if Caitlin Clark was chosen for the team, but then didn't play at all.
Yes.
It just doesn't, there's no competition, so none of it matters.
It ultimately doesn't.
Another thing that needs to be fixed.
I can give it time.
Then what? Like other nations are going to catch up as far as basketball talent?
I mean, look on the men's side.
I'm getting old. How much time do we have?
Well, I think international basketball will probably continue past our lifespans. I'm optimistic.
But I'm telling you right now that if there was a game that happened, Caitlin Clark is playing for Canada or whatever. And in this Olympics, it would be a lot more interesting to watch than whoever is playing for Canada in this Olympics.
I bet Noel Quinn, assistant coach for the Canadian national team, would take her.
Right?
Yeah.
The point of entertainment is for it to be entertaining.
Congrats to Jewel Lloyd for making the Olympic roster. Congrats to UW's Joe Wasco.
Congrats to Jewel Lloyd for winning the gold medal right now.
No, I mean, they still have to win the games.
Done. It is done.
You know, Lauren Jackson is in this.
Oh, hello.
She's not officially on the roster yet. No, none of the other teams have named their roster yet. Apparently, I heard that apparently the U.S. Olympic Committee requires them to name it so early, which, okay. Congrats to UW's Joe Wascom, who won the men's 1500 meter national title for the second time in 3 years at Oregon's historic Hayward Field.
There we go.
This time in his final race as a Husky. The UW men also got a runner-up finish from Chandler Ault in the men's javelin and finished 15th in total points as a program.
It must be so upsetting for Oregon to be such a slow college. If there's one thing that UW is known for, not exactly a softball school anymore. Softball school for a while. Going school probably still. But
yes. We did win the 20th national championship.
The University of Washington does two things if you restrict it to these last 2 years. And that is, we beat Oregon and we're faster than Oregon. That's what we do.
Love to see it. Well, that's all happening under UW President Dr. Anna Marie Causey, who announced Wednesday she'll step down from that role, remaining on faculty at the expiration of her contract in June 2025 after 10 years as UW president.
Because everything at UW must change.
This one is not happening suddenly.
It's still like, again, I mean, we talked about how the decision-making team that got UW to the Big Ten, both, I mean, literally, like, football coach is part of that team. Yes. Football coach, athletic director, basketball coach, everybody involved, all gone. And now the president of the university also gone. This is not even questioning the decision. The decision was right. But
yes,
just that every single person who is involved with that decision, they were like, yeah, we're going to do this thing. And then the process for it actually happening, they're like, well, somebody else will figure that out.
The Seattle Times story, I mean, she will at least make it to the Big Ten. She's going to be there for the first year of the Big Ten.
All of the other people leveraged it into probably better jobs.
If she ends up the chancellor, some president, some other school will really start to wonder. The Seattle Times article mentioned that decision being a big part of her legacy and unpopular among Husky fans. And I wondered whether they took a poll on that one outside of Key Arena.
Which Husky fans?
I bet there are a lot of, you know, the newspaper reading demographic is probably a little older than the Husky fan base writ large. And I think there's a greater conservatism streak among the older fan base that may not be mirrored entirely by the very online Husky fans. All right, lastly,
near to the date, July 1st. Are you going to be there at the UW Big Ten celebration?
Is there a UW Big Ten celebration?
I think Oklahoma and Texas are doing big celebrations of joining the SEC. Yes, no, they actually are.
Not doing big celebrations. They're the opposite of big celebrations.
I know that Oklahoma is doing celebrations about joining, and it's just like, at some point, you have to be like, this is just a conference, y'all. Like, that's kind of stupid. These are just the teams you play every year.
I mean, for the record, it's the first full day of NBA free agency. So if there is an event, I will not be attending. I will be politely declining. But on that note, Oregon State baseball was eliminated from the NCAA tournament Sunday, the final competition for the legacy Pac-12.
That's it. We're done.
Now we're for real done. Although I guess there are still, like, yeah. There may still be individual sport competitions. I don't know, but at least in the team sports, that's it. Well, I was not far from the UW campus last week, a little bit up north in Ravenna, as part of our search for Seattle's best cookie, which took me to a residential porch last Friday for the pickup from the cookie break. Your shocked face.
I had no idea.
This information.
I had no idea that's where these cookies came from.
It actually came as a surprise to me until I got there, because it's very near, like, some of the you know, the business main streets of Ravenna. So I'm like, oh yeah, they've got like a little storefront that they're working out of. And no, it turns out it was just like a table on the porch with a box of cookies with a handwritten note addressed to me, thanking me for purchasing those cookies. So it was wonderful. They described these as professionally homemade cookies baked fresh daily, and home pickup is available Monday through Friday for the cookie break, along with occasional pop-ups at nearby Ravenna Brewing. And the website also advertises the cookies as, quote, thick and soft, which I think was a fairly accurate description of these cookies, which I subsequently delivered to you.
Can I talk about complicated things really quick before we get to that?
Okay.
After last week's conversation, I got a text from Third Pelton brother Reese. You know, he said, when you're here in August, if that's still in the books, we should get Luke Hawley for the most complicated pizza to get in New York.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you son of a bitch, I'm in. And I was like,
wait, why is Luke Hawley so complicated? I knew that it's difficult to get, but complicated?
I was like, is it something you have to order months out? And he was like, no, the opposite. You have to show up at around 3:30 to get in line for a reservation.
Okay.
Then
yeah.
Come back later at your time, cash only, BYOB, and they're always late seating you. And I was like, I've never wanted a thing more. You had me at complicated.
Wait, should I try this? I'm going to be in New York later this month now.
Absolutely, you should.
All right, well, maybe I'll suggest that to my dinner companions. Then we can trade notes about that. Anyways, on the cookies, what did you think?
Can you remember what this place is called again? Say it.
The cookie break.
The cookie break. Can we walk through the cookies that we got first? So
Yes, we definitely can do that.
there was a traditional chocolate chip.
Yes, the classic.
There was, what was this one called? It was a sea salt chocolate chip with
So that's known as the cousin.
the cousin, because it's the cousin to the classic.
Correct. And
So
that's also got
a hint of oats.
exactly.
And
Take
then
the
I also
classic and
got
replace the chips with chunks of chocolate, a handful of oats, a splash of wheat flour, and a sprinkle of salt flakes on top is the cousin.
And then I also had a black and white cookie.
Technically known as the swirl, but
The
yes,
swirl.
look to the cookie, Elaine. Look to the cookie.
Know if we can reference that anymore.
No, I think that's still it.
Strictly for Julia Louis-Dreyfus. But many people say that Veep was a better show overall. I'm people. Literally, I watching TV. This is, again, unrelated. Watching TV while I sleep. I watched Veep. And then I got to the end of it, and I've already seen it before. This is happening in real time right now. I watched the entire show while sleeping. I got to the end, and then I ran it back again.
Wow.
That's how good it was.
But weren't you sad to not see Sam Richardson at the start of it?
No, it is like you kind of just wait. You're like, Richard Splett's going to be here eventually.
I also, in addition to that, got the brownie.
I don't think I'm for brownie types cookies.
It tasted a lot like a brownie. It had the consistency of a brownie, and it kind of reminded me, like, oh, it turns out I like cookies more than I like brownies.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so the cousin, you brought these home. It was a beautiful day in Seattle, Washington on a Friday. Classic Seattle summer day, right? It was
Correct.
like 70 degrees, sunny all day. It reminded you why you live in this godforsaken city for like 9 months a year. I drove over to the home of the Pelton cast, Boulevard Park, Washington. So you know I'm feeling good. I picked up these cookies from you. We did not speak. I grabbed the
For
cookies. I got in
complicated
the car.
reasons.
Political reasons.
Oh no.
I got in the car
Neither of us went to Yukon.
and I had both huskies. But I got in the car. I did the cousin first because I knew what I was excited about. It was still a little bit melted, but it didn't feel like they'd cheated. I had a bite of it and I was like, this might be Seattle's best cookie.
Oh.
It might be.
Did you
What was
continue
your
to think
response?
that after you ate the full thing?
I only had that one. I thought I waited on the chocolate chip one until later, which I thought was also very good because to me, I wanted to wait until it wasn't melty. And I'm like, a cookie has to be good. Both when it is warm and
Oh,
gooey.
I had some of these cookies 2 days later. They were still fucking good.
Yeah, I mean that is, but that's the mark. I don't want to have them just when they're warm. Because the thing was, you picked it up in Ravenna and then drove all the way to Boulevard Park. And real BPK heads know that's not a short drive, right?
Yes, they do, especially there was considerable traffic
So
along
it's
the
not
way.
like I think it probably stayed warmer because it was hot out and it was sitting in your car. And
Yes.
so it made the chocolate chips a little bit gooier and a little bit meltier, but it's not like you had it fresh from them. And to me, if you have to have a cookie fresh from the location and it's not good any other time, that is not Seattle's best cookie.
I
It's
agree
great
with
to
that.
have in that moment, but the fact that it was able to travel from Ravenna to Boulevard Park to me as I was driving home, and I was just like, the salt was kind of perfect. The chocolate chunks were excellent. They were melted. The inside was gooey. The outside was crunchy. It wasn't too fat. It was. And I actually think the oat flour was kind of nice as an extra element to it.
I agree.
It was a phenomenal cookie.
So I think they're kind of similar. They're kind of similar size wise and a little similar spiritually to Hello Robin. I would say that the biggest difference is these do not seem as heavy on butter, and therefore they're like a little airier, a little fluffier, I would say, than the Hello
That's what we're
Robin
gonna have to figure
cookies.
out. I do love the butter.
It's you don't have to sell me on butter. My ranking of these were I agreed that the cousin was far and away number one, classic number two, the swirl I thought number three, and then like I said, the brownie not my favorite.
I didn't eat the swirl. So I can't comment on
Oh,
that.
you did
But
not try the swirl.
No. I only had the cousin and the classic. I would say I felt like they were maybe like a half tier below the top cookies. Like I thought they what,
were
what
in
are
the
what are the top cookies to you right now?
Treat, Sugarina, Bell's, Hello Robin, maybe Met Market, depending on what we decide to do with them. Speaking of complicated searches. So I had them in the tier with Batch Baking Company and Snapdragon, which are like likely in the bracket, not quite the favorites in the bracket.
I think they're better than those. I think they're in the top tier.
Interesting. Okay, well, if you feel that way, I'm going to put them in there. I'm going to elevate them into the bracket for sure.
Oh, I think they are in the bracket right now. And again, this is irrelevant of, I had no idea how complicated they were. I knew you had to order ahead, but I didn't know that they were at a house. Like, they're not getting extra points for that or whatever. It was just a good cookie in general. To me, I feel like Hello Robin, Chicorina, and this are the top three right now for me.
Interesting. Okay. We did learn, by the way, in my research, that Coping Cookies in Capitol Hill, which was also one that I had listed as a Friday pickup only. This is not Friday pickup only, by the way. They're now doing it Monday through Friday. I think I mentioned that. Sadly, has closed since we began this search for
wow.
Seattle's best cookies. So
wow.
They're out.
We're going to need some Coping Cookies for that news.
So we're down to it. I have six more on my list, and that includes, again, the Taco Time cookies from Schwartz Brothers, which I don't believe are technically eligible, but maybe they are. I don't know.
Have you, not to step on, oh my God, I have Taco Time news that I didn't even send to you all because I was so bothered by the other Taco Time news.
Okay.
the Taco Time news I was bothered by was that gift cards weren't working at Taco Time, but I'm going to break this to you right here on the podcast. And tell me if you know about this.
What is this, a crossover pod?
I didn't order them. Oh my God. I don't know what I'm doing. I was so distracted by the other thing. Can you see this right here?
Spicy tater fries?
Spicy Mexi fries. I'm telling you. See, you had no idea. I think this is a thing that they're only doing right here in Renton, Washington, home of
Taco. So you're saying it's a trial?
I'm sure it is. I mean, have you seen it anywhere else?
Where have these been all my life?
To order this. Oh,
I mean,
my God.
Look, you know my...
That gift card better work tomorrow so I can go get those.
So it was just a temporary thing?
I don't know. They told me that they're not accepting gift cards right now, but I'm going to the top to figure out to get to the bottom of this. Literally.
I love this. It's actually true. I mean, my tater fries
power
rankings...
I saw John Stanton earlier this week.
From afar, to be clear. And you had to check with me.
No, I did not see him from afar. I guess saw him from... He was like 1 feet away from me.
Oh, wow. You had to check with me to make sure it was John Stanton because you said
I
earlier
did not.
You had no idea
not.
What he looked like.
I did not have to check with you.
You could tell because you just saw people kissing the ring and you could tell that it was... This should have actually been your takes this week. You know, sweet potato tater fries, if they're going to bring those back, are my number one power rankings.
Was sweet potato Mexi fries.
Spicy Mexi fries makes sense because it's probably easier to do. It's just a different seasoning mix on the same tater fries. I'm ready and willing to try them.
I literally forgot from the time I got to the door to ordering on. It was a whole chaos or whatever. I didn't get to order. I wonder if they're on the app. Hold on 1 second. In real time. This is
amazing podcasting here. Well, we are really usurping whenever we do the next Talk and Taco Time, which we have to do soon because there is a lot of Taco Time news right now. This is even newer than the Gelatiamo Taco Time gelato.
That's what I was going to say is that, hold on. Okay, limited time only. Okay. Sides, tater fries, choose size, small. See, it's not even an option in the app.
Okay, wow.
You have to go and order it with your mouth.
No, that's not necessarily true. You could use the kiosk.
No, I don't. I'm assuming the kiosk is the same as
That's true. It probably is the same as the app. Wow.
Because that's probably why I forgot, because I went and ordered on the kiosk first. And it's not listed as, I'm in the Renton Fairwood one. And it's not listed, but what I did get, I haven't eaten it yet, so I can't really comment, is the gelato cookie sandwich.
Not eligible for Seattle's best cookie, but still intriguing nonetheless.
I had to get it.
Yeah, of course. We had a review of that on the Discord from, I believe,
Grant
Griffin
Wojahn,
Pulliam.
right? Oh.
Yeah, it was Griffin Pulliam.
Oh, okay, Griffin Pullian.
He's coming up on the pod a lot later.
Now I've wronged him. Wait, delete that?
You
I'm
just
not
forgot who
joking.
it was.
Actually deleted.
No. Verdict, pretty solid. Not necessarily worth going out of your way for. So one Pelton cast P, question mark, because I think people are still working through the Pelton cast piece. But I liked it well enough. They'll keep them in the freezer for app orders to avoid melting. So you'll have to flag someone to get them for you. Anyways, back to our search.
They did
We're
not keep mine in the freezer. They just put it in the bag and stuck it out there.
Well, no. But you were like order ahead, is
I
what he's
didn't know I
saying.
did. I went to the app when I was rejected with the gift card. I just sat down with the app and ordered.
Well, if they knew you were right there, I think that
How
makes a
did they know
difference.
that?
I guess they didn't. Okay. All right. Fine. Different locations doing different things then.
That's good intel, Griffin Pulliam.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, I straight up, I knew that was news to you because if it never got into the Talkin' Taco Time group chat, I was like, nobody knows this exists.
We're out here breaking Talkin' Taco Time news on the Pelton cast.
That's like boots on the ground type shit. You just have to
It
be there.
is. That's
I
old
think I
school
broke.
journalism.
I'm on the beat. The
I
Fairwood
mean,
Taco Time feed.
what are we if not on the Taco Time feed?
Lord. We're taking this all the way to the top.
Anyway, so we don't have a lot of room left in the bracket here. If we've already got five to six for sure in two others that are strong candidates. So the remaining cookies need to come strong or don't come at all, I guess. Anything else on cookies? Anything else on Taco Time? I did have a want to discuss Seattle food this week because I went to a couple of new places I wanted to talk about.
Let's hear it.
All right, first off, earlier this evening, I went to Shea Boggs, a Filipino spot in Beacon Hill that had seen about on Instagram for a period of time. I know that Musong was involved, the nearby was involved in kind of getting
Can you
funding for their
spell
Kickstarter.
this for me?
Chebogz, Shea Boggs. So they
Okay.
were a food truck, now operating
At
a brick
first,
and
you said
mortar.
that, and I thought it was like we're going to be drinking like 120 beers on a
Yes,
flight.
that's how you should remember it. Now operating a brick and mortar that's in front of the Beacon Hill light rail station, not far from the Tacos Chuki's there. And last year, one of the best meal, like the most exciting meals I had all year, was chicken adobo at Ensenada in Everett on my way up to Whidbey Island, and made it back there one time. But obviously, Everett is a long ways away from the Pelton cast beloved South Side.
That's
So
like
the
outside of if you were to make like one of those cartoon maps of the Pelton cast, Everett would not be listed. Everett would it would cut off and it would just say Canada, and that would be where Everett's at.
idea of getting good chicken adobo near inside the city of Seattle was very exciting to me. I thought their chicken was not probably quite as perfectly like cooked is the Ensenada, which like is fall apart like tender, but I thought their sauce was a little bit better and it was quite outstanding nonetheless. And my suggestion to you, if you the listener make it down to Beacon Hill and go to Shea Boggs, get the ube milk cake and thank me later. Just
Wow.
outstanding. All right, the other spot I hit this week was
I
in
just want to say I'm looking at the Yelp for this place and it looks amazing.
It is in Burien, Washington, semi-home of the Pelton cast.
I don't agree with
Fireside.
that.
I mean, we're like 50 feet. The ancestral home of the Pelton cast is like 50 feet from
That is
Burien.
the most important 50 feet on the
I
face of the earth. That's like Oregon's just a river away.
we could still be in Boulevard Park and be within Burien if they had drawn the line slightly differently when they
But
annexed.
they didn't.
Okay.
They didn't, and we know about it. So don't bring any of this Beerian business here to me. Anyway, I
So
will
we
accept
had
SeaTac more than I will accept Beerian. Thank you.
No.
Did you ever go to school in Burien?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. I went to school in Burien for 2 years. Went to Seahurst. Before you remember, apparently.
I kind of knew that deep down.
I mean, you were like five probably at the time I stopped going to
I
Seahurst.
look, some of us value for life. We went there the whole time.
So we have not done Top Chef updates this season. We gave up on those a couple of seasons ago after a guy Jackson from Seattle. There was a chef, Kalena, originally from Seattle on this year's season, among this year's chef contestants, now working in Chicago. But one of the standouts, this season has been set in Wisconsin. And one of the chefs is local to Wisconsin. A couple of times has cooked walleye, including one time when they were at a traditional Wisconsin supper club, which is a concept that I learned about through Top Chef. And this spot, Fireside in Burien, is it's not Wisconsin specific, but it's like upper Midwest, Chicago and north of that, basically Midwest. And it's like set up like a lodge, basically, but with like mid-century modern decor. It's a very cool vibe inside. And one of the things they offer is supper club walleye. So went there on Monday night, ordered that naturally, tried it, was quite good. Outstanding vibe. So recommend that if you're in the Burien area.
I pulled this up and I was like, I feel like I don't miss drinking any particular alcohols. And then I saw the Malort on there and I was like,
Oh,
damn.
indeed, the Malort is what you miss drinking?
That's number one.
Our
Literally, number one with a bullet. That's the phrase, right?
waitress had a Malort t-shirt on that said, I'm something along the lines of, tonight's the night you fight your dad. So that definitely added to the vibes. Oh, Malort. So there you go. There's a couple of spots to mention. All right, it's time
This
for.
also, I'm not gonna lie, this looks pretty great too.
Yeah.
Have you ever drank Malort?
I don't think I did any of the times I've
You
been in
never
here.
have?
I don't think so.
You don't understand.
I had the Founders Lager that was on tap there. That was my
Great.
Midwest drink.
Who cares? That's just beer. I'm telling you, Malort is it is the most important drink in the universe.
Wow, in the universe. More
Yes.
than water. Oh, that got a spit take out of you.
Such a stupid thing. More than water.
Our rankings, one Malort, two water. All right, our NBA Seattle update. We've got some more on the
Oh, do
expansion
we?
front from Adam Silver at his annual NBA Finals press conference. Here's the question he was asked. You said repeatedly that the league will begin expansion process shortly after the media deals are done, and there are some very deep-pocketed billionaires ready to buy in. I'm wondering where the timeline is on that and how the league is evaluating it. After making a joke about the media deals not being done, Adam Silver said, In all seriously, according to the transcript, I meant what I said. We do need to finish up. I think I said a few years ago, collective bargaining agreement, new media deals, then we would turn to expansion. So we got part one done clearly, and thank you to the Players Association. We're very happy. I think both sides are with our collective bargaining agreement. Media deals, it's been a long process. It's ongoing, and we hope to wrap it up in the relative near term, and then we will turn to expansion. But by turning to expansion, it doesn't mean we're going to announce that now we're ready to add teams. It means that there will be a committee of NBA governors that will focus on it. There are clearly markets out there that are very interested and will run through a process. But I actually am looking forward to that. I think that the league, it's not preordained that we will expand this time, but I know there's an enormous amount of interest out there. And to me, yes, there are wealthy individuals, institutions that would like to invest and buy NBA teams, but I think it's on the league to look holistically because there's dilution, of course. Let's say we expand by two teams. What does that mean for talent? I feel great about where the talent is right now in the league, but those players have to come from somewhere. If you add two teams, how does it work geographically? What will it mean for growing the game? At some point, we'd like to look outside the United States in addition to Canada. This may not be the right moment to do that, but I'm thinking long term as well. I'm actually very excited about turning to that process, but first, we've just got to be finished with the media deals.
Okay, so that was a lot of words.
It was.
I feel like he got a lot of words out, but what do those words mean?
I mean, I think it was turning down the dial a little bit on the idea that expansion is a fait accompli, that there is a decision to be made about whether to expand. The way that he answered that question made it sound to me, and this was the thing I was curious about, like there will be a committee to consider expansion locations, and one of the possible outcomes will be no expansion locations, as opposed to a committee to decide whether or not to expand, and then a second committee to look at locations, if that makes sense. It sounds like those processes will run concurrent.
So one committee, you're saying, they're still not looking at owners. They're just looking at cities. It's, should we expand? Are there cities that warrant expansion? I feel like that's kind of just the same thing.
Probably, yes.
It's almost like how thunder and lightning are actually the same thing. It's just the sonic and the like visual effect of it, right?
Well, the fact that you worked thunder and sonic into that sentence is quite outstanding.
There we go. Obviously intentional, brilliant podcasting. But I don't know if that actually means anything for what it's worth. I think the reality is they know what the cities are. These are all human beings that have been living in the universe. They are aware of what the cities are. They are aware of what their predisposed notions are about it. It's probably more of a, the decision on whether to expand is a realistic conversation of, these are what the finances look like. Should we expand to these cities? This is a rough idea of what kind of money we can make in the short term, what kind of money we can make in the long term by adding franchises in these places. More than it is a like, well, let's look at every city in the world. You know, it's
Shelbyville is getting an expansion too.
These are mathematical questions, though, ultimately. They are short-term and long-term finance questions that they're answering. And they're answering it based upon these cities that they have. So the decision on where to expand and whether to expand, I see why that would be concurrent, because you can't just say, yes, we want to expand without knowing where you're going to expand to. Because if you expand to a tiny city, it is not as valuable of a proposition as expanding to a Seattle, Washington. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, of course they're linked, because you kind of can't, you can't be like, we've crunched the numbers, expansion's great, now where, you know?
Yes. I mean, I do think, like, look, these conversations have probably happened a lot behind the scenes.
But now they're getting into, I think this, the reality is now they're getting to literal dollars and cents. This is what the profit will be for everybody. Yeah. In matter-of-fact terms, more than just somebody being like, the expansion fee will be $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, whatever the number is, spread among everybody. What?
Keep going.
$10 billion?
Well, not for one team.
But rather than just being these hypothetical numbers, they're coming back to it and being like, practically speaking, we now have this deal. We can charge this much for an expansion franchise in this place. Because again, I don't think that there's a billionaire out there for every city in the world, because realistically those teams aren't worth as much in different places. A team's value,
I mean, there probably still is a billionaire out there, just because getting into the club and getting the national TV money is worth it, but your point is taken.
You have to do other things as a billionaire. You still have to sell the tickets to somebody. You know, you still need to grow a fan base in a city. There is a reality that
The question is what the price is. But the reality is, like, even if you have an NBA team in Oklahoma City, and if it's successful enough as a team, you know, I don't know what the Forbes valuation is for the Thunder now, but it's several billion. You're never going to come up with not several billion.
Part of the reason I was thinking at this, that a team in Oklahoma City is worth what it's worth, is because of all the other teams. Which is, I suppose, true overall, but like isolated, it's not that valuable of a franchise. But because you are part of this club that can also collectively get a TV deal, that is what makes it. Like, the value of Oklahoma City is because of the value of Boston and LA and New York and Chicago.
Yes.
So I don't know if I agree that it's the same, because those numbers can get higher. Also, those teams that are making more can one day decide that they don't want to be sharing the profits with a team like that. They need that because you have to play somebody and you can't only have teams in major cities. But like, if you were to redraw the map, which people could, the same conversation with conference realignment. If you were to redraw the map one day, all of a sudden Oklahoma City's not on the map.
It's a lot harder to redraw the map in the NBA than it is in conference realignment.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
There's not another conference for them to go play in. All right, well, there's the update.
All right.
We'll see when those media deals get announced as completed.
Is this should we take anything from this, positive or negative, or is it literally just information?
It's, again, not quite as... It's the most that he's been explicit about. We might not expand, but I still feel like you're probably only undertaking that process if you think it is very likely that you will expand.
I agree. The second you start the committee, the second that you make the committee, a committee for expansion almost never ends at no expansion. If you're a committee to do something, usually you want to do something.
Yes, there's an action bias.
Unless it's going to cost you money, which it's not. It will not cost them money.
I mean, it will in the long term, but in the short term, it'll make them a tremendous amount of money.
Yes.
All right, with that, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
The Mariners are sitting at an absolutely impressive 10 games above 500, and all too good for Jerry Dipoto, 570 win percentage. 7 games up in the AL West on a 4-game win streak. And you know what that makes me feel. Absolutely nothing. Because with great or good success comes great responsibility. And right now the Mariners have been handed, by being just slightly above average, an incredible opportunity. With every one-run win versus the worst team in baseball, the Mariners' playoff odds tick up and up. But if we're being honest with ourselves, is this roster the one that helps them compete with the Yankees or the Orioles or the Phillies or the Dodgers, for that matter? Absolutely not. But can they compete with the Guardians or the Twins? Because that 2 seed in the American League is a beautiful place to be, and I know just the way for them to get there. It is time to go all in for Luis Robert or Vlad Guerrero. There are possibly 2 of the game's best young superstars on the market with 1.5 and 2.5 years of relatively cheap and flexible team control in front of them. 2 players who each at 25 and 26 have a season with more home runs than anyone on the Mariners roster in their career, who each allow you to maintain your long-term salary goals, who don't affect the prime of Julio, and if it'll ever come, and who most importantly can help you get to the place to claim the number 2 seed in the American League and put you in a position with the top teams in baseball in a 7-game series. Young pitching doesn't last forever. And seasons where a +12 run differential translates to a 7-game lead don't happen often. With the planets aligning for them in this way, alongside the most prospects in Baseball America's top 100, the Mariners have a calling and a social responsibility to take a swing for one of the best young hitters in baseball. You finish the sweep of the White Sox, you put Luis Robert on the plane with you to Texas, and you go win a fucking pennant.
Can I take people behind the take here?
No! Yeah, okay. Sure.
Then I had to talk you into this?
You were trying to talk me out of this, and then I did the math.
I was not trying to talk you out of this.
You were like, oh, people out there are dumb, and they think this is what they should do. And I said to myself, wouldn't it be fun if there was taking it back to old school hot take style, just having some fun out there? And then I did the math, and this is the right thing to do right now. I don't think I realized just how young Luis Robert and Vlad Guerrero are. And if they are on the market, the Mariners have to do basically everything within their power to try to go get them. Because everything that the Mariners front office has said, they don't want to have all these extra years, right? And it's kind of like you balance with super acquiring superstar players. Is it, do you want somebody who's on at free agency and you have to pay them for their years of expected success and then the sunset after that? Or do you want to trade prospects to go get a player? Because those are kind of your two options for getting a player at this level. These are two players who are under team control. Luis Robert is $20 million for the next two seasons after that, which is not that much money if he's hitting 40 home runs a year and who's 26 years old.
Yeah.
Vlad Guerrero is 25 years old and has, I think, a 50 home run season already. The Yankees right now are not feeling bad about having Juan Soto. This is the time to go all in for players like that. And to me, even my favorite player on the team, Brian Wu, of course, should be on the table for something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, like Brian Wu with his arm health, like, of course he would be on the table. But yay, though he may be the best pitcher in all of baseball history, still, they should consider having him as part of this package. And there's a reality that of these prospects, we've seen so many young prospects. If you're not one of the like top five prospects in baseball, what is expected of you? Because there's always a top five, or there's always a top 15 or whatever. Does that make sense? There's always a top 15 prospects. And when one person goes up, somebody else moves into that spot of top 15 prospects. And it is a permanent thing, but we judge them solely by rankings, not by individuals. And a number 15 prospect in baseball doesn't always look the same. So the expectation for that is nowhere near what your expectation would be for Vlad Guerrero or Luis Robert. And sometimes you have to just spend money rather than having a piece of that sweet, sweet team control pie. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You're in agreement with this take? I thought you were going to push back on this.
I don't have strong feelings about it either way. The point is that you should have strong feelings because that's the point of the hot take. Even about something that's not necessarily require strong feelings. Also, I do question, how is his last name actually pronounced?
Between Robert or Robert?
Yeah. Seems like it shouldn't be Robert, but that's what it looks like the pronunciation is on Baseball Reference. And somehow, even though he has hit multiple home runs here, because I don't watch enough of the games on my actual like with sound, I haven't gotten it.
It's pronounced Robert, but
okay.
it's pronounced Robert.
Those two things are contradictory. Vlad Guerrero Jr., as well as he has played over the course of his career, feels like the kind of guy who would come to Seattle and struggle with T-Mobile Park. I just like no specific evidence about that. It just vibes. That's how I feel. And he would want to get out of here as quickly as possible. It's funny.
He leaves after next year.
It's funny.
You get a comp pick.
Robert obviously has had this amazing series, hit a pair of home runs that have just been laser beams to left field, has looked very good, very comfortable at T-Mobile Park, granted without much of a marine layer this week. His entering tonight, he had the lowest career batting average against the Mariners of any major league opponent.
Wait, that's kind of crazy.
I don't think that actually matters, but I did find that amusing given how strong he's been in this series.
I sat there and me and John Stanton, we gave each other a look and I was like, him? And it was just like, you look at Luis Robert and you're like, that's a guy I want on my team. He looks like a villain in a baseball movie. Like, that's the thing with both of these players too. They would be so much fun to watch.
Yes.
They would instantly be, even when they were bad, they would still be fun to watch. And you see them, you've seen Luis Robert coming to the plate and you're just like, this dude is a demon. Like, human beings are not built like he is built.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll see what the prospect price would be, but I mean,
it doesn't matter what the prospect. If the Mariners can pay the prospect price, like if there is a combination of prospects in the organization, they should go do it.
You're expecting me, who constantly downgrades teams for trading too much for stars, to agree with that position? There's always a price that's too much because there is the other guy or someone else that comes along. that there's always an opportunity cost
There
year for
aren't
closing. But I,
that many players at this level. There's that window.
at
It's
this
the same
level,
as
at
the
this
Juan Soto
age,
window. Yeah, that level, that age, because it's not signing a free agent who's 32 or
yes.
something. And it gives them, with Guerrero, it only gives them a year to make a decision. I mean, these players are hitting free agency one way or another, most likely. But like with Guerrero, it gives them a year to really understand how much they would want to pay him long term. With Luis Robert, I'll go with, I feel like there's going to be people who are annoyed with my correct pronunciation of this. But with Luis Robert, it gives you, they're not cheap years necessarily, but you get 2.5 years to make that decision. And then if 2.5 years, the whole world can change in 2.5 years, literally.
There's no financial decision not to add him. I agree with that. He
The
makes
Mariners
complete sense
have, they
financially.
have the money for a $20 million player.
So, and you could maybe even get Chicago to take back some salary this season in that process. Although the guy you would probably be sending back is the guy who had the game winning hit on Wednesday night. It was Benchaniger.
I want them all.
It is the Mariners have managed to go 3-0 against a really bad White Sox team in the least inspiring but most thrilling way possible. Do you have any other takeaways from attending the game on Monday night? Being on screen as captured on the Discord.
Oh wait, were people talking about that? I didn't even see that. Was that you
Noah,
or somebody else?
no, Noah screen capped it. I was at Fireside. I was not seeing any of this.
I kind of want to see this.
I tuned in just in time as he asked why Leo Messi was at the game. So if you want to
That's
search for Leo Messi in the Discord,
really funny.
you can check it out.
When you're that
I.
close, you have to be like just looking normal the whole time
Oh,
because
wow.
if you do something crazy, it's going to be captured.
What made you be doing that was going to look so bad? I mean, I'm
I don't
on
know.
camera a lot of the times at games. I'm not that worried about it. In classic ESPN writer Kevin Feldman fashion, I tuned in just in time for Cal Raleigh's walk-off grand slam. That's when I came into this one.
Why is
You
Leo Messi at the game?
period at the screen is quite amusing.
He didn't like highlight where I was sitting. People
No,
had to
but you
look.
can tell. You can tell.
What I could tell from sitting there was that Luis Robert is awesome.
Okay, good. Good.
Also, it's very funny how many walk-off grand slams the Mariners have had in history. I was trying to remember after, like, I was like, I feel like that has to be the first, or there would have been an ancient one, but I think there were 11 or something like that.
It was a truly shocking number. Yes.
There was one, I think it was the Richie Sexson one, where I was like,
10th was the official
I
number.
kind of remember that one. But most of the walk-off grand slams happened while the Mariners were playing truly, or like they were the eight, a lot in the 80s. And then I was going to say playing truly uninteresting baseball, which was the entire last 2 decades of Mariners baseball.
This July 17th against Detroit, Tino Martinez, that wasn't the get out to Riot Red was at Cleveland, I'm pretty sure, right? Might have also been Tino Martinez.
When he first coined the term?
Yeah, when Nias first hit
That
get
was
out to Riot Red.
Tino. It wasn't Edgar Martinez.
Maybe it was, but I don't know. I distinctly remember it being Cleveland in 95.
Oh, and the Taylor Saucedo, the hype video with Taylor Saucedo, it's phenomenal. That's my
Yeah.
other takeaway. I hadn't seen that yet.
You didn't even know the video existed.
No, I was mad at myself for not knowing it existed.
As you should be. All
That's how you know you haven't been on the internet enough.
right, it was a Sunday game in Cleveland, so it must have been the Sunday, July 9th. Box score here.
What, you're
Mariners
93?
scored 4 in the 7th. So that would have to be it. No, I guess this what is wasn't it? Because that was a three-run homer. Oh no, here we are. Yeah, it was Gino Martinez in the seventh inning, grand
Tino,
slam.
all right.
Yeah, off Bud Black.
Oh, hello, future manager Bud Black, right? Didn't he pick up his like 1,000th win or something?
He sure did. Yes, back
That's
when he was a
great.
loogie, Bud Black. All right, some Mariners injury updates. Brian Wu was scratched from his scheduled start on Tuesday, with Jonathan Diaz coming up from AAA to start in his place. Solid 5 1/3, no decision, as the Mariners came from behind, as they of course did in that one. On Wednesday, Scott Servais said that Wu's MRI came back perfectly clean, and he's expected to make his next start, which is good news under the circumstances. Ty France has been on the injured list with a hairline fracture in his left heel, suffered heroically, setting the Mariners record with his 90th career hit by pitch.
The graphic, I saved the graphic, the hit by pitch graphic.
All good.
Oh, it's phenomenal, phenomenal stuff.
That'll come in handy someday. Tyler Locklear was called up from AAA to replace him, had an RBI double in his MLB debut on Sunday. You saw him get an RBI on Monday, right? Oh, okay. He got a hit on Monday, right?
Yep, broken bat, bloop single.
Latest update shouldn't be much longer than 10 days for France. Jorge Polanco likely set for a rehab assignment later this week, assuming testing his hamstring goes well. Andrés Muñoz is not on the injured list, but has only pitched one game since that collision at the plate last week. Sunday in Kansas City, pitched a scoreless inning in the eighth before the Mariners gave up a run in the ninth. The ninth inning has been pretty shaky lately, but it's all worked.
I think
It's worked out lately.
Stanek has been okay.
Stanek was on the mound in Kansas City when they got walked off, right?
That might be right.
I believe that was the case.
Yeah, I think he was. But I've been generally okay with Stanek.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's done a good job overall. Look, the Mariners may be good at finding relievers off the scrap heap. This is asking a lot of them. Like
They've gone too deep in the scrap
I was
heap.
going through and looking at it, and like of their top four innings pitched last season in the bullpen, Justin Topa is injured. Not for the Mariners, but he is injured. And then all three that are still with the Mariners, Munoz, hopefully it's not long term, but it's him, Spire, and then Matt Brash. So a lot of injuries in the bullpen.
I was thinking about the Seawald trade though. And just like, I mean, like the Diamondbacks got to the World Series, Seawald was there. But considering just how good Rojas has been, it
Yeah.
was quite a swindling for the Mariners that they got their number two hitter in that deal for a closer at the deadline. Just like,
They're currently starting three players from that deal on a regular basis.
wait, who else? I thought it was just
Ryan
Rojas and
Bliss?
Canton. Oh, Ryan Bliss was part of the deal
He
too?
was part of the
My
deal.
boy? Ryan
Yeah.
Bliss? Wow. That's what I was saying with all these players coming back. I'm like, I like too many players on the team now.
It's true.
I
Now, he was a
love. Sl
second round pick by the Diamondbacks. I guess we did not spend enough time on Ryan Bliss because we were so excited about Don Canzone.
I mean, that's a freaking deal right there.
I agree.
No, Ryan Bliss is great. A little bit of pop, like. How old is he? He's a little bit older, right? 26, 20, 24? I mean, I don't know. That was a hell of a deal, I
I
have to say.
agree.
But also Tyler Locklear having the most Seahawks name of all time. When people are like Tyler Lockett, and I'm like, some of us here remember Sean Locklear.
Wow. You're really going with the deep cut. It did occur to me when you mentioned most Seahawks name of all time. Yes.
And he's great.
All right, let's get into a roundup, starting with our Calder Cup playoffs update. Coachella Valley completed a gentleman's sweep over the Milwaukee Admirals in the Western Conference Final with a 5-1 win Saturday in Milwaukee. The Firebirds then awaited the winner of the Eastern Conference Final between Cleveland and Hershey, which was decided with Wednesday's Game 7 in Hershey, won by the home Bears 3-2 in overtime. Now,
Wow.
obviously, you remember that last year the Hershey Bears beat the Firebirds 4-3 in the Calder Cup final. After that time,
Yes.
Coachella Valley needed six games to get past Milwaukee. So it's the exact same path through the Western Conference Final and Calder Cup final for the Coachella Valley Firebirds as they look to avenge their loss against the hated Hershey Bears. Wasn't there something about like people in Palm Desert not eating Hershey? Wasn't that a story during the during the finals last year. I'm gonna have to look that up. Coachella Valley bans Hershey's, something like that.
I'm for it.
Yes, here we are. In June 2023, the Firebirds asked fans to boycott chocolate in
There we
support of their
go.
series against the Hershey Bears.
I don't know if the fans did that. The team asked them to.
I don't. Well, chocolate wasn't technically banned. Fans could still buy it at Firebirds home games.
Capitalism always wins. If
Wow.
there's one winner in all of this, it's capitalism.
Congrats to capital. Toast to capitalism.
Undefeated.
But not actually. All right, Seattle Sounders. Oof. They scored first through Jordan Morris in the 12th minute Saturday in Kansas City, which, by the way, we talked about how both soccer teams were in Kansas City. Somehow I did not connect that the Mariners were also in Kansas City at the same time. Kansas City was the nexus of Seattle sports last weekend. Kansas City equalized 7 minutes after that Jordan Morris score, and then the game turned when Reid Baker-Whiting received a second yellow in the 73rd minute, leaving the Sounders down a man. Sporting Kansas City capitalized with a winning goal in the 85th minute. Neither
I feel
team
like they've
generated
had
even
a
one
lot
X
of
goal.
players get red cards this season.
It is, I believe, the third game that they have lost this season shorthanded. I think they've lost all of them. Sounders still 10th in the West now, 3 points behind the Portland Timbers for the last playoff spot. They'll host third place Minnesota United on Saturday, when the Sounders will be celebrating the inaugural 1974 NASL squad is the first
Hello.
inductee in the new Eternal Sounders Circle of Legends.
There we go. I'm going to be there.
Are you?
Yeah.
Wow. You're just at all sorts of sporty events now.
Make more sense for Messi to be at a soccer game.
True. Seattle Reign FC, no more fortunate in Kansas City as they lost
Oh,
5-2
Kansas
at the
City was a
Curt.
house of horrors for Seattle sports teams.
Mariners got the win on Sunday in extras. That was all. Jordan Heidema converted twice in the first half, giving the Reign the lead both times, with the Curt exploited for 3 goals in 2 minutes just after halftime and added a fifth from the spot in the 67th minute. The Reign streak of only playing the NWSL's top four teams continues Sunday when they host the Portland Thorns on CBS. All right, Seattle Storm, riding high, have won, now won 7 of their last 8 games. Friday night, they went into Las Vegas. It seemed like a bigger deal that they took down the Aces at the time. Since then, Las Vegas has lost their last 2 games, their first 3-game losing streak since 2019, as they are down to 500 on the season. The lone loss, though, sadly, did rule the Storm out of the Commissioner's Cup final, as they fell Sunday at Minnesota by a lopsided margin. And if it had been closer, that would have mattered, because the potential tiebreaker, if there's a multi-team tie, is point differential in games among the tied teams. And the Storm did beat Phoenix by 18 points, but they lost to Minnesota by 19, and Minnesota's loss to Phoenix was by 1 point. So even if the Mercury end up beating the Las Vegas Aces on Thursday, the Storm still can't win that tie. The Storm's outcome, though, intriguingly, at Dallas, will
If
determine.
anybody followed what you were saying there, that I'm impressed.
They can't go to the Commissioner's Cup final.
You could have just stopped there, but I like that you went into it. Earlier,
This.
you were like, wasn't on the for political reasons. But this, you were like, let me explain this complicated scenario that cannot happen.
The Storm will determine whether Minnesota, potentially, if Phoenix wins at Vegas, the Storm's outcome at Dallas determines whether Minnesota or Phoenix goes to the Commissioner's Cup final. Because if the Storm win, it's a 3-team tie and Minnesota wins. If the Storm lose, it's a 2-team tie, and Phoenix, by virtue of beating Minnesota head to head, wins that one.
Wow.
So that's the start of this, in a bit of a road trip here for the Storm. On Sunday, it's a rematch with the Mercury, who will have Brittany Griner back in the lineup. They've won both games since she's returned and has been playing at a top five level in the WNBA. That'll be also be the first game on national TV for the Storm this season on Sunday at noon.
Please tell me it's on Ion.
No, I mean, I guess they have been on ION, which is national TV. So I was not counting that, sadly. But
You only count ESPN and ABC as national TV.
I guess actually I'm wrong, because they are playing on ESPN on th tomorrow against Dallas. So,
What's
but
your
that
definition
one's
of national TV? Everybody gets eye on.
I just didn't know that they were on ESPN on tomorrow. They will be on ABC, the network, on Sunday. And then Wednesday, they're back in Las Vegas for a second time. Looks like the Aces will probably have Chelsea Gray back for that one. She's been upgraded to questionable for that game against Phoenix on Thursday night after not yet playing this season in this slow Aces start.
So has Chelsea Gray has not played at all?
No.
How much do you think that is? I mean, after watching, it's been a while, but after watching, it was the championship against or the conference finals against the Storm. Chelsea Gray is incredible.
Yeah, I
How
mean,
much
she's
of
not normally, also pick your level shot maker in addition to also being the best passer in the league. She's a good
I mean,
shot
she was
maker,
like best
but she
player on the
could not
face of the
miss.
earth,
Yes.
excluding nobody during that time period.
Correct.
But how much of their struggles at the beginning of the season have been due to Chelsea Gray being out?
I think a lot, it's interesting. Like, I looked at this last year when they were in the finals. Like, any time that they had Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, Asia Wilson, their four all-stars all on the court together, even after Candace Parker got hurt last year and they were no longer as dominant, they were still really awesome with those four players on the court. You took any one of them off the court and suddenly they were only okay, which is why I picked the Liberty in that series. Now, then the Aces managed to win game four in New York to close out the series without Chelsea Gray. This is, her injury goes all the way back to last year's WNBA finals. Also, Kelsey Plum has not started the season particularly well. And, their depth hasn't played, I think, as well as they hoped coming into this season. So those have all kind of been factors in it. And then the Aces have also been kind of unlucky. Opponents are hitting 40% on threes. That's just random noise at this point in the season. So that's not going to continue. But, one of the things that matters now is, like, the Storm is fourth, Las Vegas is down to fifth. Being in the top four and having home court advantage in the first round is huge. So these games matter a lot right now. So
Okay.
Storm basically are who we thought they were. Nick Ogwumike, 26 points on Tuesday against LA, her first time playing her old team. Storm pulled
Not
away
really
late in
like
that one.
Olympic worthy 26 points, but it was
No,
nice.
exactly. So there you go.
Not to get political here.
Don't know which about that. You don't think things are described as, oh, that appointment is political or that decision is political in an office?
No, it's fine.
All right, women's basketball news. Aaliyah Goodman is joining Tina Langley's coaching staff. The Oregon native spent last season as assistant at her alma mater, Oregon State, after a one-game cup of coffee in
Okay.
the
All right.
WNBA. Yeah,
Yeah,
no,
you
she
won
didn't.
me back. You won me back with Oregon State. We're
She's
good.
from the state, but not a duck. 2 year stint as director of recruiting and player development at Duke. Goodman fills the opening left when Katie Faulkner, who also came to UW from Oregon State, was hired as Pepperdine's head coach last month in a bit of news that we completely missed at the time. So a toast to Katie Faulkner on that one.
Wow, asleep at the wheel.
We did not miss this one,
We're
per
the
Mike.
only Seattle sports podcast mad at ourselves for not having this news.
For my colleague Adrian Wojnarowski, Mike Hopkins joining the Phoenix Suns as an assistant coach under Mike Budenholzer. This is a bit of news that
No, I knew about
barely.
this.
Oh, it did. Based on your response, I was hoping that was breaking it to you.
The thing that I'm most shocked about is I knew the news. I didn't know that Woj broke it though.
Yeah. So, from a UW perspective, this means a slight reduction, presumably, in what they owe him in the final season of his contract, with the offset of him going get taking another job. Kind of reminds me of Bob Bender, after his stint at UW, going to the NBA. So we'll see if Bender coached in the NBA a long period of time as an assistant. We'll see if Hop stays there or heads back to the college game at some point. Also, Wesley Yates III, to no one's surprise, headed to USC, where he's going to play with his relative Quincy Pondexter.
It was a little bit of a surprise to me who didn't know any of this information.
That they were related to each other.
Yeah. You were like, to no one's surprise. And I'm like, wow, can't wait to find out what's next. And then you said his relative, Quincy Pondexter. And I was like, whoa, okay.
It appears I somehow deleted the UW softball section from here.
It's probably good.
But Ruby Malin is
Our best
headed.
UW softball update ever.
Oh
Right now,
no.
I do not think we need it in the roundup.
Ruby Mahlin is headed to Oklahoma State next season. Huskies do now have a pitcher. They
Okay.
have pitcher on the roster, and that's Matty Balk, a transfer from Florida State, who was a top 20 recruit per extra innings in the 2023 class, but pitched just had made just three starts during her 2 years at Florida State. They also added a shortstop transfer, Riley Peshek from Montana. So some players are playing for UW, just not players from last year's UW roster.
Yikes. Yeah, stick with the deleting of that one.
All right, lastly, this week, for the first time in a while, we have some Seahawks news to
There
discuss
we go.
as they wrap up their offseason program with a mandatory mini camp. They signed PJ Walker as a third quarterback on the roster ahead of that mini camp. The Temple product spent 3 years in the Colts practice squad before reconnecting with his college coach, Matt Rhule, in Carolina. Played nine games over his first two seasons with the Panthers, starting two before starting a career high five games in 2022. He joined the Browns last year, started a pair of games, including the 24-20 Seahawks win on October 29th, where he went 15 of 31 for 248 yards with a pair of interceptions at Lumen Field, also running for 27 yards in that game. Walker has never posted a QBR better than 25 in a season, but brings a lot of experience to that third spot on the roster.
And also, love PJ Walker. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, he's just someone who's been in the mix for a long period of
Oh,
time.
yeah. He's a
Been fun to watch.
great third quarterback.
Seahawks also had wide receiver Robbie Chosen participating in the mini camp on a tryout basis. You may
There we
remember
go.
him as Robbie Anderson during his longtime career in Carolina. Chosen played nine games last season with Miami, finishing with just four catches for 126 yards and turned 31 in May. So, probably fully in the Terrell Owens on the Seahawks stage of his career.
We'll see. I mean, it's fine to add some veteran depth at this point of the season. Somebody who could possibly hang around. Maybe he's in camp now, and if you need him later on, he'll already be accustomed to things.
Know the system a little bit, yeah. Although a spot I think where they have a pretty decent amount of depth at wide receiver after the addition of Laviska Shenault Jr. All right. Well, there we go.
I'm looking at the Dix Cup, and they have it animated with all the places that they have locations. And
Do they have
this
Everett
is
on there?
they do not. They go, I
Is
was
Edmonds their farthest north location?
Edmonds, yes, Edmonds, and then Lake City. That's what I'm noting on here. Is this the same as the Peltoncast map, basically? It
I
goes
don't
from,
know. Did the Peltoncast map get to Edmonds?
I don't know. I think maybe, yeah, I think Edmonds to Federal Way. I feel like Tacoma, though. Maybe we're like, I'm a little bit more down to include Tacoma on the Peltoncast map. It's also offensive that it lists Renton on here, even though there is notably not a Dix location in Renton, Washington.
Wow.
Thank you. The
Wow.
Kent one is the one in Midway.
Yes.
There couldn't Kent is literally like, I'm like 5 minutes from Kent, and Midway is the farthest place on the face of the earth for me.
That's not true.
It's farther
Ravenna
than
is the farthest place.
Edmonds.
Yeah.
Also, there's a hydroplane on the cup.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no, this is like, this is very filled. Anyway, that's the Peltoncast map.
The way,
Stretch.
did you notice Bill Belichick was at the Celtics game the other night wearing a UW shirt again?
Really?
It's possible he only wears UW apparel at this point.
No, there was another college that he was wearing.
Was there?
I think maybe it was Northwestern. There was another college specifically that he was wearing the apparel of that wasn't UW.
Where does Dad coach?
Was a little offended. But no, I did not know that he was wearing UW shirt. I mean, it can't be a bad thing having Bill Belichick in the building. We have no Husky football updates at all.
Didn't really have anything this week, no.
Yeah,
They
we're
have a they added a three-star recruit for 2025. I'm just not
Yeah,
there.
that doesn't rise to breaking news. They'll probably transfer.
Look, if he might pitch for UW softball next year, then it would be notable.
That's you get mentioned. Yeah, shortstop from Montana. Yes.
He
Hated
had a pretty
Hershey
good freshman
Bears.
season.
There
He's the
we
top
go.
ranked middle infielder at some point in the softball transfer portal rankings that I saw.
Great Osabor started at Montana State.
Yes. It
Okay.
definitely wasn't Montana.
Okay. Well,
You said that
or
as if it, just him. It wasn't Danny Sprinkle was there.
I know, but like transferring to UW. Well,
So there you go. And, depending on how serious you are about this Coachella Ice Firebirds thing, no Hershey's chocolate for the next week.
And on that
Well,
note,
thanks for listening.
thanks.